All right, listen up. This is Hoxton on Audio Boom. Get your ears working, people.
Hello, and welcome to Double Tap, Audio Boom's official gaming podcast. I'm Alice Taplin, and this week I'm joined once again by the amazing Janice Davis, author of the video game book The Holder's Dominion, for the second half of our chat. But first, I spoke to Gareth Williams from the Game Central podcast about PAX South, a gaming show which took place in Texas over last weekend. Gareth started off by explaining more about what PAX is all about.
PAX is an event started by the Penny Arcade guys, which is a video game website, a pretty popular one. The thing I think of PAX for is like the panels. They'll have tons of panels where podcasters will come and they'll do like a live version of their podcast, or people who are making games will come and answer questions from fans or just speak about the game candidly. So it's really an opportunity for people who make games to all sort of network, but also fans get to go there and play all the indie games that are coming out.
So why is it important to have shows like this that kind of show off indie games as opposed to, you know, other bigger shows that are kind of more focused on the larger producers?
Well, I mean, if you go on Steam on any given day and look at the new releases, there are dozens and dozens of dozens of smaller games out every single day. So PAX, those guys put in a lot of work to making sure that they only have the creme de la creme of indie games. So it's kind of useful if, like me, who doesn't have a lot of money, knowing where you want to put your money, because there's just so much saturation in the games market nowadays, especially on Steam.
And I guess as well, it's important to give indie developers a platform because they don't have as much money to put behind like marketing their games as well.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, E3 is just humongous now. You won't see that many indie games there. That's more about, you know, EA and Ubisoft coming and bringing their games for people to play. So it really is important for this indie scene, which is becoming more and more prevalent nowadays, to have this outlet that shines a light on them.
Have there been any games that you would say have kind of got quite big from being showcased at PAX?
There are a few games that I sort of saw bits about that I thought was interesting. I've seen a lot of articles about a game called Dreadnought, which is a multiplayer game, basically giant spaceships fighting each other. Most games that are like spaceship combat, you're in sort of small tiny ships and you're zipping out of asteroids and firing lasers at each other. But this is more, everybody is in control of an absolutely giant ship that you can fit with dozens and dozens and dozens of types of weapons. And it's just giant ships fighting each other, which sounds awesome in itself. But then the developers are saying they want to give you as much customization options as you have in a game, say, Magic the Gathering, which, you know, there are thousands and thousands of cards and you can put them together in any permutation. So for them to say that that is their aim makes me very excited, because that's a level of ambition I don't really expect from a smaller game. So they definitely piqued my interest with that.
Orbital, this is Grifter. Time on target, 30 seconds.
Understood. Kappa defense grid is down. Grifter, you are clear to engage.
Umbrella Corps, which is a Resident Evil online-only multiplayer shooter game, has been knocking around for about a year now. Looked terrible, by all estimations. Apparently it's at PAX, and I've seen some hands-ons, and they're saying they're actually putting a lot of care into this, making it a pretty interesting third-person shooter. Like, the Resident Evil bit is sort of superfluous, but it's got really cool, like, noise mechanics, so, like, every step you take and every bullet you fire will obviously bring zombies to you, and other players will be able to use stealth in interesting ways to get you, and it sounds like this could easily have just been, like, 5-on-5 shooting game with zombies in the middle. But instead, they're actually taking their time and making it into something a lot more interesting. So I have a lot of respect for Capcom for doing that, because this is a Resident Evil online-only third-person shooter game that nobody expected anything from, but if they're actually going to put the time to make it interesting in some way, then good for them.
order. Kill them all.
It's survival of the fittest. Or something like that, right?
Objectives confirmed. Kill anything that moves.
The team behind the Friday the 13th, the game, they had a panel at PAX, and it sounds like they got pretty much the right idea for what they wanted.
Yeah, I was reading, it was like they revealed a load of the, like, kill animations or something, and there's one where you can get, like, drowned in a toilet or something, which I thought was, I was like, yeah, that sounds like a game that I want to play.
Yeah, I have a list in front of me.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll just reel some of these off. Jason rips off your leg and walks away with it. That's good.
Yep.
Jason slits your throat and drowns you in a toilet.
That was my favorite.
Jason folds you in half in a beach chair.
Okay.
Jason crushes your head in a metal object. Standard. Jason curb stomps your spine. That's a nice one.
Yeah.
Jason rips the top of your skull off. And the final one of my favorite is Jason smashes you against a tree in your sleeping bag. So it sounds like they're pretty much on the right track.
Yeah.
With that game, they can't really go wrong.
No, not when you're being drowned in a toilet or smashed against a tree in your sleeping bag.
But I think they know exactly what their market is, and they're appealing to that really well.
Mm-hmm. Troy, did you hear something?
Relax, babe. Probably just Steve trying to scare us.
They're just kids, right?
So was he. He was just an innocent boy. I was a good mother to him. My boy. My sweet, sweet Jason.
So why do you think that people should attend if they can't afford to PAX?
It's much less corporate than an E3. It's just people who love video games. Like, the amount of cosplay that you see featured from PAX is just enormous. There's Zero Suit Samuses and Tekken characters and just absolute droves of people going dressed in cosplay because they're fans of video games. You know, you don't really get that at E3. You get people walking around with press badges and cameras just filming everything they see. Whereas at PAX, it's much more, it's about the gamers and for the gamers. I mean, it started by Penny Arcade, who are just a website about video games, you know. This isn't to make a lot of money. This isn't about advertising. This isn't about booth babes. This is about video games. Going and seeing and playing video games. And I think, personally, if I had the opportunity to go to either PAX or E3, I would choose PAX.
And now it's time for this week's gaming news. Batman Arkham Knight has been cancelled for the Mac and Linux platforms. After continuing problems with the PC version of the game, even after its relaunch, Warner Brothers made the announcement on Steam earlier this week, with users who pre-ordered the title on those particular platforms able to apply for a full refund. YouTube's original horror show, Scare PewDiePie, will premiere on February the 10th. The show will see the Let's Play star, whose real name is Felix Schellberg, thrown into real-life situations inspired by horror video games. Schellberg himself said that he is not told what's going to happen during the show and has described it as part prank show, part suspense adventure. Taylor Swift will be getting her own mobile game. Glu Mobile, the developer behind other celebrity-endorsed games, including Kim Kardashian, Hollywood, revealed that they have a multi-year partnership with the pop singer and that it will be a one-of-a-kind digital gaming experience. Although few details have been released about the storyline, Glu have said that gameplay will utilise Taylor's unique creativity. The game is expected to launch in late 2016. In the first half of my interview with author Janice Davis last week, we dived into what her book, The Holder's Dominion, is all about, and also she gave some great tips to budding creatives on how to get started and how to write some great characters. However, it was also interesting to learn about the struggles Janice faced as a female author of a video game book which had a female main character.
A lot of publishers wanted me to change the protagonist to a male because they didn't think that there was a wide enough audience for a female to be the lead. And I was shocked and devastated, and I had to fight for her to stay a female.
Oh my God.
I also had to fight just to keep my name on the book because they wanted to change, publishers wanted to change my name to initials because they were afraid that male gamers wouldn't read a book by a female gamer.
Ridiculous. In the second half of this interview, we spoke more about being a woman in the world of video games. Why do you think there's still this attitude that, oh, well, we can't put a women's name on the front of the book, or we can't have a female character?
Yeah, it's still this weird, funny, backwards thinking from, you know, somewhere at the top. Just recently we hear about the Star Wars toys not having Rey. And when we read about how the makers still to this day go, oh, well, we didn't think that a boy would want to play with a girl doll. And it's this back age excuse that it has to change because it's so outdated.
It's interesting because years ago, you know, when I was really young, Lego, it wasn't gendered. It was just marketed as being Lego. It was a toy. And then suddenly they started having, well, here's the girl's Lego. And I was like, but I already play with Lego. I don't need girl Lego. Like, I already have girl Lego because I'm a girl and I'm playing with the Lego. So
right. And it's really, I recently, last year, I had a baby girl. Her name's Cora. I'm really excited to have her in our lives now. But I'm already getting, you know, gifts and clothes that are so just cluttered with pink that I'm thinking I want her to have more than just that one narrow output.
Mm. And there are a lot of people that will sit at home and be like, oh, I wish, you know, we had more women characters to play in video games. And it's like, well, you know, if you want it, go out and make it, you know, make it happen, because that's how it's going to happen.
Absolutely. That's, I think, one of the key things is that I try to share is stand up and don't be afraid to start. There are so many engines that you can practice making games with that are free. You can just go online and download them and work on them. And so even if you've never made a game and you're out there and you have the slightest intrigue, like, hey, I really want to make a female lead in this video game. She does, you know, X, Y, and Z. You can do it. And then you can start sharing that and going to game jams, for example, where there are all these developers that'll gather in little meetups called game jams or different meetup groups for the IGDA, for example. And you can go there and say, hey, you know, here's what I've been dabbling in. And right there could open up an opportunity for you to get an internship or a job or become part of the team because you're already doing it. See, that's the key. If you do the job that you want now and you don't wait, it'll happen. It'll come to fruition because you're proving that you're already one step ahead of all the other lazies out there that don't, you know, that they say they want to do something or they want to play a certain character, but they don't, like you said, they don't do anything about it. So if just that one step will just put you miles ahead.
Mm. And what about writing female characters as well? Because people seem to struggle for some reason to write women very well, if at all, into games or into books or into like anything, basically.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's true. I had a developer on a video game panel that one of the audience members asked, you know, why can't we play your game as a female? Why is it just male? And he did make the excuse that it was more difficult and more expensive to animate and create female characters. And I really disagreed with him. I felt like that was just like a cop-out answer. I felt like, come on, seriously, just put some hair on her. She'll be fine. You don't need to animate us any differently. We walk the same as a man, pretty much. And so I just thought that was like a cop-out excuse, and I was kind of frustrated at that. So I do think that when writers or creators think about creating a great female lead, to stop thinking of the obstacles and just start doing it. And I offered suggestion for writing video game lore for different video game companies when writing leads. And I would say, hey, you know, I think she would make a great general or a great fighter. And I think when I outlined it and created it and showed the depth of it, then they could kind of grasp the idea and they were more open to it. I think like this one main character that I'm writing, she's an EMT and she's very capable and she's very educated and witty and strong. And so when I just broke down the idea and show the length and breadth of her, then it's like, oh, okay, she can be, you know, just like this soldier type EMT that can, you know, come to the rescue just as a man can because of her training. And it's believable and it's awesome because there really are women out there that are come to the rescue every day.
Well, precisely. Yeah, it's not like, you know, if you were injured or something and then a female paramedic came along, you'd be like, no, you can't do it.
Exactly. This isn't the dawn of time. I mean, we have proven like women are just incredible. And I love writing lead characters and also lead villain characters, I think, are really cool if we could incorporate more women villains because there are so many male villains. So I'm working on an idea for that, too.
I'm excited for that. I do like a good villain. And I think a lot of the time, the female villain is usually, her story is usually, well, she was jealous, so then she became evil. And it's like, really? Is that all we get?
Right. Absolutely. I really want, you know, my next female villain to tackle, you know, real fears that we all go through, because I feel like that's what first and foremost makes a great villain, is bringing to light those things, those bone chilling moments that we can relate to and that we can feel off the page, that like if that villain was right next to me, I would shudder, you know?
So I feel like as well with female characters, especially female protagonists, there's this whole thing where everybody's like, oh, I want a strong female character. So instead of making a sort of well-rounded female character, which is, I think, what everybody kind of means by strong female character, they'll basically be like, oh, she's a girl, but she's really one of the boys. And it's like, that's not all I want, you know?
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I feel like the gender swap is awful. You don't want to just write a male character and then just stick a female in it, because it just doesn't feel authentic. It doesn't feel true to who we are. And like you said, how well-rounded we are and how capable. So I really agree with you. I think it's getting overdone that it's like, oh, look, we have a female lead, but no, she's just out there acting, like you said, one of the boys, and so masculine and rough and angry constantly. And it's like, no, come on. Now we're getting on the opposite side of a great female lead. Now we're muddying the waters on this level too. So I do agree with you that's a huge need in movie, TV, video game lore. I really hope that we can tackle that.
Something that interests me, because you mentioned that you just recently had your daughter.
Yeah.
So how does that kind of play in? You must be juggling quite a lot with being a parent and also going to all these panels and playing games. I don't know. Do you even get time to play games anymore?
It's so hard to juggle all of this. I kept traveling and doing panels and signings while I was pregnant. And then I all last year, as her little infant, she would travel with me, and everyone on the airplane would be like, oh my goodness, is this her, you know, Cora's first flight? And I'd be like, no, this is her sixth. She went everywhere with me. And you know what's cool is that she is going to grow up watching her mom travel and work and not, you know, not put on pause this passion, this crusade to help bring spotlights to women. I feel like I would be remiss if I didn't show that to her, you know, show her that I'm fighting and trying as hard as I can to pave the way and give her as many opportunities as I can. And so it's cool because she likes the convention floor. She likes seeing all the art and the cosplay and all the people that stop to talk to her and, you know, come to my booth and then, you know, my mom will come and I'll hand her to her and she'll hold her while I'm on panels, or my husband will come or his sister. Like, we kind of have this little family, you know, pact where we're like, okay, you pick the cities that you want to go to and then we'll divide and conquer.
That's amazing. Convention team family. That's brilliant. And I also think the other thing is that you're putting to bed that stereotype that a woman can follow her passions until she has a kid and then she's got to look after the kid and then the child is going to take up all the time, and you've got to basically put, like you said, your own passions on hold.
Right. You know, and even fellow moms when I was pregnant said, oh, well, you're going to stop traveling and signing and working when Korra comes, right? And I said, well, why, you know, why, first of all, why would you think that? Because there's some, like you said, some stigma, some stereotype that just automatically assumed. And they would say, oh, well, because it's impossible. I mean, you can't do what you're doing and have a little baby. And I just said, all right, just watch. I'm going to prove it to you. I'm not going to say anything, you know, negative or shocking. I'm just going to show you by action. And honestly, it really can be done. And I really want to give power and encouragement to any women out there that have just become moms who still want to work or follow their dreams. You can. It just takes extra juggling. It takes extra help and coordinating from friends and family that live in different places. And like we were talking about earlier, Alice, I asked a nanny to come help me during the week so I can keep writing. So I definitely feel like I couldn't do it all on my own for sure. And I don't think we should try and take it all on ourselves and reach out for help and ask, you know, when you need it and it can be done. But I think it's so important for our little ones to see us, you know, not staying stagnant and showing that, hey, you know, this is what you can do if you see a need. Fill a need.
Yeah. And what annoys me about that stereotype that, you know, mums have to be the ones that'll stop you know, doing what they want to do when they have a kid, is that you never hear a guy being asked, oh, well you're going to stop traveling when, you know, your wife has your child, right? You know, that never happens.
And it's completely unfair. I completely agree. It's so odd that after everything that we have proven and fought for over the decades as women, it's so strange that still happens. And you know what else? There are not changing stations in the men's restrooms here. Like, in very few restaurants, most restaurants, I'll go in and there'll be a changing station in the women's, and then my husband will go in to the men's and he's like, this is so sexist. I can't even change my daughter because there's not a changing station in the men's restroom. Are you kidding me? Like, what if he was a single dad?
Yeah.
What would he do? He was like, hey, I would just go to the women's and be like, sorry, women, I don't have one. I got to go to yours because my daughter has a poopy diaper.
Or, you know, you just have to do it out in the middle of the restaurant and be like, well, if you don't want me to do this, then put a changing station in there.
Exactly. That's right. That is what he said. He's like, well, I'd have to do it right here on the bench. But I agree. I mean, how weird. Like, how that's so wrong to think that a man wouldn't need to change his child in the restroom just like a woman would.
Yeah. That's weird. I'm going to have to, like, ask, you know,
yeah, start
my male
asking
friends
your fellow male co-workers to go check the restrooms. Please ask them. Because I'm curious if it's like a worldwide thing or only in the US where we're totally lagging.
Yeah, I don't know. See, I'd go check, but that would involve having to go into the men's, you know, toilets, and I don't want to do that.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Don't do that. Who knows what you'll find in there? No, just kidding.
That's everything for this week. Make sure you check out the first half of my interview with Janice Davis in last week's episode. And if you've already listened to that, then you can find more about her, her book, and all the conventions she'll be at around the US on her website, janicedavis.com. You should also make sure to go and listen to Gareth's podcast on the Game Central podcast channel. See you next week.
Double Tap is an Audio Boom production written and presented by Alice Taplin.